Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Hope you have a good weekend planned. Looks like Southern California is going to have some rain tomorrow, so maybe that means a movie as you're shut in. We're going to hear from our critics next hour, their favorite picks for the weekend, and we've got some good ones they're going to talk about. I also interview the author of a new critically acclaimed biography on Cary Grant. That's coming up on Film Week next hour on KPCC. Just to update you on the latest California election returns, we still have four of the ballot propositions that have not been called yet by AP. Proposition 14, the stem cell bond measure, is leading, a very slight lead, 51% yes currently, but that's not final according to AP. Also, Proposition 15, which would establish a split role on property tax with commercial and industrial properties being subject to reassessment to current market value, that is losing, 52% no, but it has not lost. That has not been called yet by AP. Proposition 18, allowing 17-year-olds to vote in primaries if they'll turn 18 by the general election, that is losing, 55% no, but it has not lost. AP has not called that Proposition 18 yet. And finally, Proposition 19, which has a couple of different measures dealing with property tax, including lower Prop 13 tax basis that's portable for older residents and also for inherited properties. The heir would have to move into it within a year to keep the lower property tax basis and avoid reassessment. That is leading 51% yes, but too close for AP to call. AP has called all the rest of the California ballot propositions. And of course, the results for the presidency are still up in the air, though, as you just heard on NPR News, Joe Biden has moved closer. He is but six electoral votes away from clinching the presidency. Biden has taken a slim lead in Pennsylvania. Things still very tight in Georgia. And we're going to be talking about what's going on with the results, as well as the expected legal action and recount surrounding these different races. Joining me again from Politico, White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico, Anita Kumar. Anita, thank you for joining us again. So we're very similar to where we were 24 hours ago. It's just that Joe Biden has gotten somewhat closer here. Where do we stand with the six states that are not yet called?
Yeah, I mean, he has gotten closer, and really President Trump has gotten further away. He would need to secure several states at this point, some of the states that he thought he would have, and he doesn't. So Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada, Joe Biden is leading in all of those states. And that's really what's changed overnight, that he's added Pennsylvania and he's added Georgia. Both of them are important for different reasons. Pennsylvania is important because it's 20 electoral votes. It's a huge, huge number. President Trump needs to win that, or he really just doesn't have a path anymore. Georgia is interesting for the reason that we just heard, which is they haven't elected a Democrat in quite some time. So this would be flipping the state. And that's something that Democrats are cheering about. Really, at this point, if Joe Biden gets any of those states, even Nevada, which only has six electoral votes, he would be the winner.
And Georgia, you mentioned, the Secretary of State there said that it appears the result will be within the half percentage of the two candidates, which triggers an automatic recount, though the movement on recounts, the number of votes that move there typically are pretty small.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, people generally say when you have recounts, I'm just talking sort of in general, you know, you can see the votes change maybe 100, 200, 300 even. So, Biden actually has a lead right now or, today, over 1,000. It's still possible, I suppose, but that's unlikely to change that many votes.
All right. So that's where we stand right now. And of course, President Trump, as you just heard on NPR Hourly News, his team has filed a number of legal challenges at this point. Do we have any sense of the timeline for courts to take up these legal challenges, Anita?
Well, we've seen courts acting pretty fast because of, for obvious reasons, right? The election is going on. And actually, the president lost two cases yesterday they had just been filed. One was, you know, I don't consider them significant in that they weren't going to turn the election. But one was a case in Georgia where the Trump campaign was asking for a batch of 53 ballots, mail-in ballots, to be thrown out because they were saying that it came in after the deadline for ballots on Tuesday. That didn't happen. And then they lost in Michigan, a state we haven't talked about, where Joe Biden won, but the Trump campaign is looking at a recount, asking for a recount there. That was related to whether they could have they could watch, you know, if they could have access, whether they have access to the counting. And that was not, didn't go anywhere. So, you know, the courts are acting pretty fast, but what we're finding is that they haven't, the Trump campaign is filing all these lawsuits, but doesn't seem to have the evidence so far to get really anywhere on them.
We're talking with Anita Kumar of Politico, where she's White House correspondent and associate editor. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, if you have any questions for Anita. Anita, do we know if in any of the other very close uncalled states, automatic recounts are triggered by the closeness of the result?
I don't know that off the top of my head. And of course, we don't know you know, how close some of these will be. I will say that, you know, of course, you listen to both campaigns, they're both sure they're going to win. But if you look at some of them, the numbers aren't expected to be that close. Like Pennsylvania, when all is said and done, and they still have a lot to count, they do think that Joe Biden, there's people that think Joe Biden will win by a good number. And so I'm not sure that it would trigger that. Now, I did mention that the Trump campaign is already saying they're going to ask for one in Wisconsin. They are hinting that they're going to ask for one in Michigan as well. But important thing to remember about recounts, they don't happen right away. Generally, they happen after, you know, the state certifies those results. You know, they have to have the official results before you can recount them. So for Wisconsin, that wouldn't be until December 1st. This could really drag things out for quite some time.
Anita, I also want to talk about the U.S. Senate, because you mentioned that if Joe Biden wins Georgia, that would be highly significant in flipping a state that has traditionally been Republican. And there's the potential that both of their U.S. Senate seats are going to be up for runoffs in January. And so, and it would seem not surprising if they both go for the same party. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, it's really all eyes on Georgia, which is a little bit of a surprise. We thought it would be, you know, maybe Florida or Pennsylvania. But Georgia is really interesting because both seats were up. They are super close, and it looks like both could go to a runoff. Not quite sure about that. And of course, we're still getting the results from some other states around the country. You know, if you'll recall, Democrats were pretty sure they could take over the Senate. They haven't done that yet, and it doesn't look like they will be able to unless they can pick up these Georgia seats. So you're right, that would be tough. It's trending Democratic. They'd have these two runoffs, and the runoffs aren't until January 5th. So, you know, it's tough. Both, all three of these races are tied up, not only in the presidency, but also who controls the Senate.
All right. Anita Kumar joining us on Air Talk from Politico. Also with us, Loyola Law School Professor Justin Levitt, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. Voting rights was his focus there. Professor Levitt, it's good to have you with us again.
Thanks. Nice to be with you, too.
So let's talk about the various legal actions being taken by the president's team. One of them being, as Anita talked about, the allegation that Republicans or members of the president's team did not have sufficient access to be able to oversee the processing and counting of ballots. Do we have any sort of case law on that? And because I know that the state statutes are written kind of loosely on this.
Yeah, and unsurprisingly, as people are beginning to discover or rediscover, every state's slightly different. Every state has a slightly different statutory structure. Some of them have pretty specific regulations about who can observe and where and when. Some don't. Some of these lawsuits have marginal merit. Some don't. I think none of them are likely to actually contribute to any change in the result. Even where the Trump campaign is winning, and they're winning a few of these, they're losing more than they're winning, I think, It's really about these sort of minor procedural issues. So a judge the other day found that observers could move from 20 feet from the counters to 6 feet from the counters. That was the major win broadcast in Philadelphia. None of that's going to change any individual vote and whether that vote is counted, in part because there's actually no evidence that there's a meaningful number of votes that are subject to disapproval or ineligible. So these process complaints are, some of them are real, but I don't think any of them are going to matter.
What about, Anita mentioned in Nevada where there was the allegation that several thousand votes were counted of people who no longer lived in the state. How does that kind of stuff get challenged and dealt with when a campaign makes that allegation?
Well, the allegation, unfortunately, seems to be of a species that we keep seeing, not just in this presidential election. We've seen it for decades. It's a comparison of the voter rolls to the Postal Service's change of address system, and it does not show misconduct or ineligible votes. I can't stress that enough. This is a sloppy version of assuming that somebody is ineligible to vote because they may have changed their mailing address. There are lots of reasons why people might send their mail somewhere else, including deployment for military purposes, even if they've never changed their voting address. And there are lots of reasons why, even if people have changed their voting address, they may still be eligible to vote where they were formerly registered. So the allegation that there are thousands of people who, because the post office has them listed somewhere else, aren't eligible to vote in Nevada is unfortunately just a repetition of the shoddy argument that we've seen many times before. I think, frankly, the letter was sent, the allegation was sent to the Department of Justice and to the Clark County Registrar, and I think they'll review the allegations, and when the dust settles, they'll find that 3,000 allegedly ineligible voters comes down to a handful of one, two, or three people who shouldn't have voted, and that's it.
Well, and another thing to remember with Nevada, there are a lot of people who live part-time in Nevada, live in other states, including California, other times of the year. We're talking with Loyola Law Professor Justin Levitt, Anita Kumar of Politico. Anita, I'm going to let you go because I know you're very, very busy today. But what is your sense of timing-wise for the counts in these different states? Are most of them planning to be wrapped up by the end of the weekend or not?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait on a couple of these. Remember, a couple of these states that are still remaining allow ballots to come in late. And because of that, they're not going to have every single one. Of course, there's also overseas and provisional ballots that will be coming in. So it really depends on how tight they are, right? If it's really, really close, they're going to need to count. Obviously, they'll always count every single one, but we're going to care about every single one because we were not going to be able to tell. It does sound like, well, I was thinking Georgia could come in, and of course, they were almost done, and they're now talking about a recount. Nevada says it might be today, so we'll have to see. Some of these other ones, Pennsylvania, still looks like they have a good number to go. So you remember, only Joe Biden is just counting on having one by the end of the day, and he's actually counting on giving a speech later today, and he thinks that he will have a result by then. If he doesn't, I think he'll go ahead with that and still have a message to America. But if he does get the 270 by then, you can expect him to say that he believes he's going to be the next president of the United States.
And of course, that things don't stop. They'll continue to count the votes. Even if Biden hits that 270 elector threshold, the counts will continue in all of the states. That's not the final word, even if it is definitive that he is the next president.
That's right. Every vote counts, and they're going to continue to count. And just like they always do, it's getting more attention this year. But of course, they continue to count those ballots that come in, either late but still count, the overseas things that are coming in. They will provisional ballots. They continue to count that. And he wants the 270, obviously, because he wants to win. But they'll continue to figure out who is the winner in all these different states so that we have that count. And also important to note that the president's team will be looking at all of those states. That doesn't, they're still going to contest those things. I don't hear that the president's going to concede anytime soon. So if it gets to that point, so expect them to be watching all of those things in all of those states, and expect some more recounts and lawsuits.
Thank you so much, Anita. Again, really appreciate your generosity with your time, and we'll look forward to talking with you in the days ahead.
Thank you.
Anita Kumar, White House correspondent and associate editor for Politico. We'll continue On Air Talk with Justin Levitt, Loyola Law professor. If you have questions for him about election law, the variety of lawsuits that have been filed thus far or that might be forthcoming, what, if any, of those might get to the Supreme Court, we'll talk about that as we continue at 866-893-KPECC. 866-893-5722 or the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. We'll be back in 1 minute. Just want to remind you, even as we talk about other topics this hour on Air Talk, such as the latest on COVID-19, we're having our weekly update with Dr. Peter Chin Hong coming up in just a few minutes. Or even the NBA that we're going to spend a few minutes with. They've decided when they're going to start the season. And Film Week next hour, we will come on the air at any point if we have breaking news about Joe Biden reaching 270 electoral votes or any other very important news. We will bring it to you during the course of the day. That's during Fresh Air in the noon hour. Whenever it happens, you'll hear it on KPECC, even if we're talking about other aspects of news on the air at that time. We continue with Loyola Law Professor Justin Levitt, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the U.S. Department of Justice. Voting rights was his specialty there. If you have questions for Professor Levitt, we're at 866-893-KPECC. Ivy in Altadena asks, which of President Trump's filings, if any, are likely to go to the Supreme Court? Professor?
None is the short answer. So all of these are over state law issues, the vast majority of them, and minor state law issues at that. And the Supreme Court doesn't hear state law issues. It's only if there's a federal thing involved. But even for the very few lawsuits at the moment that involve federal issues, or even if more arise, it's extremely unlikely that the Supreme Court will take any of them up. There's one exception to that, but it's also a lawsuit that might not matter, that's in fact likely not to matter. There's a lingering lawsuit from before the election in Pennsylvania about whether the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was correct, was valid, when it extended Pennsylvania's deadline very modestly. Pennsylvania had a deadline to say you had to get mail ballots in by election day. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, in light of delays in the Postal Service, in light of the pandemic, it's okay to postmark ballots by election day if they come in 3 days later. That day is today, by the way. There was a challenge in the federal courts over that got to the Supreme Court, and it's still sitting there. But really important to emphasize, it only affects ballots that may have come in over the last 3 days. And there are a really small number of those. Both campaigns were working very hard to get their voters to turn in ballots early if they had them. And it doesn't look like any of the results are going to turn on any of the ballots that come in late. So even if the Supreme Court ruled, it's not going to change the results of this election.
And are those votes in Pennsylvania, those ballots that have come in between the end of Tuesday and the end of today, are those set aside separately in case there is a ruling that those could not be counted?
I think they don't have to be under Pennsylvania state law, but I think the Pennsylvania officials are being prudent and doing exactly that, setting them aside for the moment, just in case there's any further dispute. They don't have to, technically, but I think people are erring on the side of caution. And I think the results that we're going to get are going to be results without the benefit of those votes. I am hopeful that those votes will be counted because they were validly cast by eligible voters, but I don't think they're going to end up mattering, at least to the presidential result.
And is the issue there that was being alleged by the president's campaign that the change to give the 3-day extension for receipt of the mailed ballots, that was done too late in the process? Wasn't their argument that there's nothing wrong with doing that, but doing it at, quote, the last minute was unfair somehow?
Yeah, that was their argument in a lot of other cases. They've certainly made that argument over and over again. That wasn't actually the argument in Pennsylvania. The argument in Pennsylvania was based on a more obscure argument and one that the Supreme Court justices are kind of intellectually fascinated by, but I don't think want to resolve in this particular context. And that's whether state courts can validly interpret or construe or override or modify decisions of the state legislatures when it comes to the rules for presidential elections. The courts always said, that's fine. And we're used to state courts reviewing state legislative action all the time. But there's been a little bit of a pickup in momentum among a small group, or what used to be a small group of people, to suggest that that's not fine under federal law. That's the issue at stake in Pennsylvania. It could be really disruptive to a lot of things down the road. That's a big deal legal issue. And so for legal nerds like me, that's a really fascinating issue. Yeah. But I don't actually think it's going to impact that many votes for this election.
I guess I'm a legal nerd because I find it a fascinating issue. On what grounds do the state high courts have this ability to extend deadlines, or did, because you have in, you know, many jurisdictions, you've got election boards, you've got registrars, you've got secretaries of state. What gives the court entree? Is it something in the state constitution, or what are the grounds?
That's exactly right. It is something in the state constitution, and it's not particularly exceptional. The more intriguing question is, what makes you think the state courts can't do that? So state courts construe statutes all the time. That's bread and butter of what state courts do. And they also have state constitutional provisions that help, in some cases, provide emergency modifications or exceptions to regular old rules. So it turns out that a deadline that says you got to receive a ballot by election day may be fine most of the time. But when you can apply for a mail ballot quite late in the cycle, and the Postal Service says, we can't guarantee we'll be able to get you that ballot in time, the state court said it violates the Pennsylvania state constitution to deliver somebody a ballot that won't be valid. That is, to set somebody up for the expectation that they'll be able to cast a valid vote that won't actually work. So they said, this time only, just for these circumstances, we don't normally have a pandemic, we don't normally have Postal Service slowdowns like this. We'll accept any ballot that's postmarked by election day in order to accommodate what the Postal Service says is the amount of time they expect to be able to send a ballot back. The Constitution, they said, the Pennsylvania state constitution, requires for these circumstances a little bit of a modification to the normal rules. And we saw courts grappling with that sort of thing, state courts, throughout most of the summer and fall.
Just fascinating. What a great explanation. Thank you. So I feel like I understand that so much better now. Dell in Burbank wonders, and I don't know whether you have this information, Professor, but when there's a recount, does the candidate asking for the recount pay up front? Do taxpayers end up paying for it? And just adding to Dell's question, I'm assuming there's a difference if there's an automatic recount because of the closeness of the results versus a challenge coming from the candidate who trailed.
That's exactly right. And it's a great question. So it in part depends on exactly what you mentioned, Larry, whether there's an automatic recount or not. And that depends on exactly how close. So many states have set percentages. If the election is a certain percentage close, usually it's a fraction of a percent, 0.25%, a quarter of a percent, or half a percent, then just to make sure that we're dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's and that we're not only making our list, but checking it twice, there's an automatic recount. We know what the initial tally is, the tentative tally, and then we're going to go count them again just to make sure. Those recounts generally swing a few hundred ballots here or there. They don't generally swing more than that. And so that's just a way of being extra sure that we're extra right. For margins that are still close, but slightly less close, so within a percent or so, many jurisdictions also say, we're not going to guarantee you a recount, but if you want one, you can have one. You just have to pay for it. Those recounts also normally swing just a couple hundred votes. And that's part of why the state says, we'll do it, but the tab's on you if you want us to do this thing that's not likely to change the answer.
Unless it changes the outcome, right? Because if it does change the outcome, are they still on the hook for paying for it?
That I'll confess I don't know, but that really doesn't happen often. So 1% turns out to be a lot. In 2016, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, New Hampshire were all states that were within 1%. And there was litigation, there were recounts that were conducted, and they didn't really change anything notable. I'd have to go back a pretty long way to find a recount that was 10,000 votes, 20,000 votes, which, you know, in a state of several million is a very small percentage, but a large number. You'd have to go back a pretty long way to find a recount that actually flipped that many votes to change the answer.
Professor, so good to have you with us again. We really appreciate it, and have a great weekend.
Back at you.
Thanks. Justin Levitt, Loyola Law Professor, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Department of Justice. He was in the Civil Rights Division. He focused on voting rights. And our thanks to Anita Kumar, White House correspondent for Politico, giving us the very latest on the presidential race. Coming up a little bit later this hour, we need a break from politics, right? We're going to talk sports and the NBA reaching a deal with its players to start the season Christmas week. Yeah, that's a fast turnaround. What does that mean for older teams like our champion Lakers? LeBron's going to have to pace himself, I would expect. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later.